Now I can give you details after the concert.
Right.
Lori knows the names of these next numbers.
I sure do. This will be our last numbers. And then I believe there'll be a brief underlying intermission. And we're going to do three reels. The first is called Through the Fields. The second is called Forester's Hornpipe. But we're playing it like a reel. And the last and ultimate tune is comes from the great state of Maine. And it's called Good for the Tongue.
And Maggie Purse is originally from Belfast, Northern Ireland. She's now making her home and has it for about 20 years in this country, in Massachusetts. And she's a marvelous singer, and as well as a storyteller, and she's going to do some storytelling for us tonight. Please welcome her out here.
I want to take this opportunity to thank Michael Klein for inviting me here. It has been a real experience to stay a whole week with one set of people, and I hope that the people who were in my classes and the people whom I razzed and shouted at tea table, etc., will have enjoyed themselves with me as much as I have with them. It's always difficult to choose a story, especially at what I feel is a very important concert for me. I want to do my best. I want to do something that really pleases, and yet, on the other hand, there is the selfish, egocentric Maggie Purse who says, do the one that you really want to do, that you really like. And of course, even though I am from the industrial city of Belfast, around about the age of 12 or 13, I fell in love with a little 15 square miles of mountains called Mournland, which is only 32 miles from Belfast. And many of the stories that I have collected are actually from that part. Once upon a time when the birds ate lime and the monkeys chewed tobacco up a tree. That's the way my father started every story to me, and why should I be any different? There was a farmer, and he lived up on Spelga. Spelga is the road that runs right through Higher Mourne. It's a lonely road, windswept, with maybe only an odd sheep, usually black face, to look at you. But this farmer, he was a happy man. And the only thing that caused him unhappiness was the fact that his good wife had died many long years ago, leaving him with the upbringing of his three sons. But other than that, his life was content. However, as the years fled by, and William, James, and John grew to manhood, the father would look round his cottage on High Mourne, and may God forgive him, but he would miss the woman's touch in the house. And he would think to himself, well, I know I make grand stew, and I know that the lads keep the place clean and tidy, but God Almighty, is William not thinking of getting married yet? So one fine day, he cornered William, and he says, now look, William, I know that you're a young man. He was 33. You must understand that in Ireland, many's a man marries at 40 and can easily father six children after that. He says, I don't like to push you, William, but have you not seen any of the girls, you know, in the barony or the townland that you might fancy to splice with? And William looked his father dead in the eye, and he says, look, Da, I'll be honest with you. You've been a good father, and it's not that I don't like the girls. But he says, I haven't set my cap on one of them. But I promise you, as soon as I see the girl that is my heart's desire, I'll rush her to the first priest that I see coming up the lone, and that I swear to you. So God help the poor father, he sort of thought, ah, well, more than likely I opened my mouth too soon, but maybe James will be different. So he bided his time. And in maybe about another year, James, who hadn't reached 30 yet, was walking home from the dance. And who does he see at the end of the loaning but the old father, you know, knocking the dottle out of the pipe? And he says, good evening, James. Was that young Rosie McCann that I saw you leaving up the loaning there? Aye, it was, says James, it was that. She's a grand dancer. Did you know that we were dancing down at the crossroads? By God, she can fairly lift her feet. Do you fancy her? Ah, now come on, Da, what's this? Are you going to start this William thing with me? My God, can I not have a whirl round the floor with a girl? Then you're getting ready to marry me off to her. No, I didn't mean anything about it, you know. Didn't mean it. She's a very nice girl, Rosie, and of good family too. Would you not fancy her? My God, lad, I'll tell you the truth. I'm getting a bit fed up doing housekeeping. I've been doing housekeeping for years now, and I've got the ploughing to do as well, and I've to go down into Kilkeel and pick up the hern at the weekend. Now, come on, lad. Surely to God, you would really give Rosie serious thought. I'm sorry, Da, but I'll tell you something. As soon as I see the girl that is my heart's delight, God help her, she won't get a chance. I'll rush her off to the priest the very night. Now, don't ask me again, Da. You know that I'm a man of my word. Well, I do, James. And he looked at his two big son, William and James, and he thought, dear God Almighty, all I've reared are a couple of old bachelors. They'll be sitting there by the fireside for the rest of my born days. And then he suddenly looked at young Johnny. Now, Johnny was young. Johnny was only 22, but Johnny was a ladies' man. I mean, let's face it, all over the whole valley, Slieveny man, all over by Silent Valley, he was renowned. He would be, you know, putting his arm round a girl's waist. He was dancing every other night. If there was a wake even 10 miles away, he'd walk to it. If there were any young girls in the family that he could wink at and sort of sympathise with them, if you get what I mean. Are you not taking me seriously? So at any rate, the father thinks, my God, maybe Johnny will be the very one for me to talk to. So the next time he saw Johnny coming home from a late dance, he cornered him. He says, now listen, lad, I want to talk to you really seriously. I've already spoken to William and James. He says, you really have an eye for a pretty girl. Aye, I know I do, Da. I will now, look, if you have an eye for a pretty girl, if you have an eye for too many, you'll get a really bad name in the county. Now listen, do you not think, like with your wild ways and all the rest of it, that the best thing you could do would be to settle down with some nice wee girl from the valley of Slieveny, ma'am? Settle down, rear children, get a nice wee girl by a farm. And already you could see all the girls' names totting up on the old boy's head, you know. No, says Johnny. No, to have an eye for the ladies is one thing, but to talk about matrimony and walking up the aisle of the church, but God, that's another. But I'll tell you what, Da, as soon as I see the girl that's my heart's delight, I'll tell you, and I promise I'll go to the chapel the very next day. So the poor father thought to himself, ah, well, maybe I shouldn't have even spoken to him. I should have just let them go at their own rate, because God knows men are never very fast, you know, about marrying in Ireland. And the father thought, and who knows, maybe there'll be, you know, somebody new in the townland that'll take one of the boys' fancy. And so the months fled by. And it was spring, and then spring slowly wafted into summer. God knows you'd hardly know the difference of them in Ireland, you know. Rain spring, rain summer. But by autumn, the days were lengthening in dusk. In other words, at about 7 o'clock at night, the dusk was beginning to fall along the mountains. And even though it wasn't dark, by maybe 7:30 or 8, you could definitely see the mist rising. And he had been down, the old fella, had been down in Kilkeel that day, getting some fish, talking to his friends. And he came up through the valley of the Silent Valley, up past the reservoir and the high pines by the Domain Wall. And as he walked and turned round into Spelga itself, wafted on the breeze, he could have sworn that he heard fiddle music. Oh, it was wild and sweet. And he thought to himself, my God, only that I know that none of the boys play fiddle, I'd swear that sound was coming from our house. And as he walked on up the road, the sound seemed to grow louder. But this time he realised, no, that's not just a fiddle. Surely there's the skirl of the pipe. Surely that's an ullion pipe, if I'm not hearing wrong. And then as he continued on up the road, he thought, ach, no, it's not the pipes at all. No, that's a penny whistle. Surely that's a penny whistle. And by the time he got to the Lonan, I declare to God, you would have thought that there was a whole band up at his house. And he stopped at the end of the Lonan, and he thought, I'll tell you, maybe the boys have some visitors over. Maybe it's O'Donnell or the fiddle. Maybe he's over and he's brought some of his mates over with him. So he started slowly up the Lonan. And I don't know how many of you have actually been to Ireland. You know, when we talk of a Lonan, that means a lane up to the house. But you don't realise that many a Lonan is not just a stretch of 100 or 200 yards. Many a Lonan stretches way up into the hills, 1 or 2 miles from the main road. And that was the way the old farmer's cottage was. And as he made his way up the rocky surface of the Lonan, the mist was sweeping down from the mountains. And just as he came to the stone dike, maybe about 200 yards from the actual door of the cottage, to his utter astonishment, coming down from the high hills, were three of the most beautiful women he had ever clapped eyes on. They were wearing long grey cloaks, and as they walked, the greyness of the cloak mixed with the greyness of the mist, so that you weren't quite sure where the mist started and the actual cloaks began. And the old man looked at the three women, and never had he seen such beauty. And he knew these were not ordinary women from the townland. One was tall and dark, the hair as black as a raven's wing. And then there was a saucy, sonsy looking wee redhead. The hair was the colour of the red fox that had run into Loch Shanna in legend. And then last, tripping lightly over the heather, mixing the grey cloak with the mist, was a girl with hair the colour of ripe wheat. And as they came down from the mountain track, they danced in front of the house on what they call the street. And from the door came out his three fine sons, William, James, and John. And as the three men came up to the women, each one of them took one of the girls' hands, and the music swirled higher and sweeter, and the father stood as if turned to stone. And as he watched, they ran onto the green sward in front of the cottage street, and there they began to dance. But these were not the dances known in the barony. These were not the dances that we were used to, because sometimes they were wild and sometimes they were so stately that the old man felt that he was watching something from far off times. There was a gentleness, there was a feeling of castles and nobility and years long passed. And then as quickly the music would change and it would become light and gay, and the sons danced with the women and the women danced with the son, and never had he seen such love in either face. And slowly the mist began to disappear and disperse over the stone dikes of Mornland. And slowly, ever so slowly, the black night appeared, and the millions of bright, bright stars that only Mornland knows in autumn. And still they danced. And the old man stood freezing with cold, with the damp of the night dew soaking the trouser legs. And then dawn began to appear very, very slowly. And as it appeared, the three young and beautiful women, without a backward glance, swept up the mountain track and disappeared towards Comida. And they disappeared so quickly, with the mist swirling swiftly around the cloaks, that the old man couldn't quite make out what was grey cloak and what was morning mist. And as the three women left the cottage and went up into the mountains, his three sons came off the green sward and, without a backward glance, went into the house. And the old man put his pipe, now stone cold, in his pocket, and then he walked towards the house. But as he walked towards the house, he looked upon the morning dew which covered the sward, and he realized that there were footprints there. And he went over, and there were three pairs of footprints, large, large boot prints. And they seemed dark. They seemed so dark against the silver dew of the morning mist. And cautiously, he bent down and touched the footprints. And when he brought up his hand, each time it was dripping with blood. And hastily he wiped his hands and he went into the cottage. And he told no one of what he had seen and heard. That year was 1914. His boys went off to war not more than 3 months later. And like many young men, the flower of our youth, not one of them returned from the First World War. And in Mornland, this story is known as the Choosers of the Slain. Mornland, County Down. Thank you.